Hello, hello, hello. It's Thursday, April 18th, and can you believe this week marks 5 years since the devastating fire at the Notre Dame in Paris? The great news is, though, according to local media, the cathedral should be back open to the public from December this year. I remember when this happened. I was a wee breakfast TV morning reporter at the time as the images started coming in through the telly. Crazy, crazy morning. At the time as well, President Emmanuel Macron promised it would take 5 years to get it rebuilt, and here we are. What a celebration. That'll be in December for the people of France. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen and this is What's Worth Talking About. With submissions closing on the fast-track approvals bill this week, we talked to a politics professor about how unusual this legislation is, given it would give final approvals to three government ministers. The Beths made their Coachella debut last weekend and they're back performing there again this weekend. Lead singer Liz Stokes joins us from California to chat. Worries over mushroom foraging in Victoria, Australia has prompted a health warning from officials, plus the not-so-naughty runaway cows of Guernsey. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Tomorrow, submissions close on the Fast Track Approvals Bill, which is aimed at speeding up the decision-making process over infrastructure and development projects thought to have significant benefits. The bill would put any final decision in the hands of the Ministers for Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Development. Currently, those are Simeon Brown, Chris Bishop and Shane Jones, skipping the usual consenting and select committee processes. The new legislation has provoked concern about allowing final decisions to be controlled by such a small group of ministers and comes on the heels of the government's first 100 days when the National-led coalition passed more legislation under parliamentary urgency than any other MMP government. Urgency is when the normal processes are suspended to get things through quickly. Richard Shaw, a professor in politics at Massey University, has been writing about all of this and joins us now. Welcome back to Newsable.
Kia ora, Imogen.
Why are you worried about what you call the use of executive power to govern?
I have some concerns, latent concerns about the extension of executive power to govern. Clearly, you need executive power to govern, and that is the purpose of the executive branch of government. What I have some concerns about is the extent to which there is something that is starting to approximate executive overreach, a recourse to executive power without an equivalent recourse to some of the checks and balances that we do have in our system, in our parliamentary system. And also a considerable use of executive power in ways, primarily through the use of urgency in the House, which mean that members of the public who have become over the last 30, 40 years really used to having the opportunity to say, well, I don't agree or I do agree through the submissions process have been cut out. Whether or not that pattern of behaviour continues, we don't know. It's something to keep an eye on, I think, because we do want to keep some sort of sense of checks and balances here.
While the Fast Track Approvals Bill is going through that select committee process, I suppose we don't know what bills this Fast Track Approval Bill will then have an effect on. So do your concerns around that extensive executive power extend to this particular bill as well?
They do, insofar as what this legislation will do, assuming that it passes through the parliamentary process unscathed, and it will do because the government has the numbers in the House, is it really significantly concentrates decision-making authority in the hands of three ministers. There is an expert panel to which ministers will make submissions for processes, applications which they think can fit the thresholds, the requirements for the fast-tracking process. The other process remains in place as well. But what it will do is concentrate final decision-making authority in the hands of ministers. So it will be at the discretion of three men at the moment who will make decisions about whether or not something goes through that fast-tracking process. And it's what wraps around that, I think. So the priority that's placed on economic development, regional and national economic development, there are concerns that will be at the expense of environmental and other concerns as well. And I think there are certainly concerns about the extent to which opponents of particular proposals for fast-tracking will be able to make their cases heard. It's a specific instance of a concentration of executive authority, which will have really significant impacts. Some of them will be positive impacts, but there may well also be negative impacts. But we may not have the same opportunity to comment or debate or argue the toss about those as would have been the case under the existing set of arrangements.
Is that panel you refer to the only checks and balance that we'll have if this legislation goes through?
It's the most significant one in the sense that ministers will refer an application to the expert panel, and the expert panel can advise or can recommend to the stakeholding ministers that an application be rejected or accepted, or accepted in part. But those are recommendatory powers. Those are not decision-making authorities. That stuff resides with the ministers.
Turning back to the putting things through urgency, the government argued it raced lots of stuff through in its first 100 days because the parties had talked about all of them a lot during the election campaign and people voted for them, so no need for lots more discussion. Is that a valid reason?
Oh, it's a valid reason. It's not necessarily one that I would agree with. My sense is that there were not a great many people who had in their minds a National Act New Zealand First government when they cast their vote. So I'm not sure that the government as a whole can say we have the mandate. Clearly they do in the sense that they have the numbers in the House. But I think it's one thing to say that. That's not in question. They absolutely got the numbers there. But it is another thing to say, and therefore everything that we do, we have a mandate for.
Massey University Professor in Politics, Richard Shaw, always great to chat.
Thank you, Imogen. Good to talk.
We have a result on what you think about AI beauty pageants. I talked about this yesterday on the pod. The world's first Miss AI comp is being held next month, a beauty pageant for women made by AI. I told you it made me feel icky, and most of you agree, actually. We asked you on Instagram if you thought it was weird or if it was fine. 92% of you who voted in our poll said weird. Just 8% said fine. We also chucked this up on the Stuff website as well, though, and 77% of those who voted on there said it was weird. Versus 23% who are fine with it. Hey, if you want to get involved next time, make sure you're following NZ Stuff on Instagram. Weekend 2 of Coachella starts on Friday, and the music festival's drawn some interesting headlines after its first round. Musician Grimes has had to apologise after some mega technical difficulties during her set, which saw her quite literally screaming in anger on stage. Blur frontman Damon Albarn told the crowd they'll never see Blur perform at Coachella again because no one was singing along. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce were spotted supporting some of the acts as well, but forget all of that noise because the biggest headline for us here is Kiwi band The Beths, who made their debut last weekend and are getting ready to play again this weekend as well. Liz Stokes, The Beths' lead vocalist, is here for Newsable Entertainment, proudly brought to you by FX's Shogun, an epic saga of war, passion and power set in feudal Japan, streaming now on Disney+. Liz, welcome to Newsable.
Hello. Thank you.
Tell me about walking onto that stage for your first performance. What was going through your head?
I try really hard to stay calm.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. It feels like it's a constant push and pull the entire set for when it's like a show with a lot of expectations. I feel like we've done a lot of shows now, so that, you know, normally I don't get nervous, but got a bit nervous.
Can anything quite prepare you for playing something like Coachella? You say you've done a lot of shows, but I imagine Coachella, just even the sheer scale of it, is something else, right?
We've played a lot of like festivals and things before, and it was a really nicely run festival from the back end, so that was good. Sometimes festivals kind of like, you go in and they you play and then they spit you out and you're like, what just happened? But it was really nice. But yeah, the biggest thing about it is just how big it is in your head and trying to like do a good show, especially because it's live streamed as well. So trying to make sure that you're kind of like playing these two shows at once that are both good for the people in the room and good for the people at home. It feels like it's a lot to kind of have in your head and try to like tamp down the stress and try to, like, we rehearsed a lot in the lead up to make sure that we felt really comfortable.
I can imagine it just must be so, so wild. Were your shoes tied tight enough? I believe you told the crowd that was one of your main concerns because you didn't want your shoes flying off mid-set. Do you kick a lot?
I don't not kick, but, you know, I feel like it's just kind of a classic kind of nightmare thing where something happens that you could not have anticipated, and that's... Yeah, I have a lot of scary gig dreams where I'm like, show up at the gig and I'm like, oh no, I forgot everything. I didn't bring my guitar or my pedals or my shoes, I guess.
I'm glad they were tied on tight enough. And as I mentioned, Grimes had a few technical difficulties. There was nothing like that for you guys on stage, right?
There's always something that comes up, but that's part of, I feel like, being on tour as a musician, is it's like just constant small troubleshooting and figuring things out. But we got everything sorted and okay for the set.
Seeing as you get sort of a peek behind the curtain, is there any like fun, interesting fact about Coachella that you've learned that other people might not quite know about?
It was my first Coachella at all, and we played on the first night, and then for the next two nights we just got to be like punters and just like go to the festival but with like artist backstage area, which is like, there's so many people at that area too. It's like all the artist guests and everything. And it was pretty nice just having like access to toilets and different toilets and like a bit more catering and stuff. You got to see so many famous people. It's very exciting. I saw Taylor Swift when we were at Spice. Yeah, it was wild. I was like, this is great. I'm having the time of my life.
And what's next for the Beths after this weekend?
Well, we are playing some like kind of side shows around Coachella. So like we're playing in Tucson and we're playing in Las Vegas like the day after we play the second weekend of Coachella. So after that, Jonathan and I will hang around in LA for a little bit and I'll do some writing. And yeah, we've got a tour later in the year with this band Always that I really love. They're from Canada, back in the States again. And hopefully we'll do some shows in New Zealand. It's been a while.
Yeah, and I know everyone here would love that as well. Liz Stokes from The Beths, thank you for your time and thank you for joining us for Newsable Entertainment, proudly brought to you by FX's Shogun, an epic saga of war, passion and power set in feudal Japan and streaming now on Disney+. We're still going to talk about Australia and mushrooms and what you need to watch out for here in New Zealand. But if you haven't already, make sure you chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because it will mean you get every episode of Newsable straight to your phone. It is autumn, the traditional season for mushrooms, which is yum, yum, yum if you love mushrooms like me. They can divide some, I know that. And just quickly the other night, fiancé Ted and I learnt the hard way that you need to soak dried shiitake mushrooms for at least 6 hours, not the 20 minutes odd that we soaked ours. I digress. In Victoria, Australia, they are quite worried over the thought of people foraging for mushrooms to the extent health authorities have put out a warning for parts of the state. It says,
as the weather becomes colder and wetter during autumn, poisonous mushrooms such as deathcap and yellow staining mushrooms can be found in certain parts of Victoria. And we advise learning how to identify wild mushrooms.
And the potential dangers of mushrooms have been made only too clear with the death of a New Zealander who drank something that was thought to possibly contain poisonous mushrooms at a health retreat in Victoria last weekend. So do these same mushrooms grow here, and what do we need to watch out for? Well, to help us out, we're joined by Peter Buchanan from Landcare Research. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Imogen.
What can you tell us about the death cap and yellow staining mushrooms mentioned in that health warning across the ditch? How poisonous are they?
Yeah, well, the death cap mushroom was very topical recently and led to the murder charge on Aaron Patterson and the death of three people, hospitalisation of one other. It's a very deadly mushroom. It doesn't kill you outright immediately. It lets you linger for a while, and maybe on day 3 to 5 you might die, and one single mushroom is enough to kill a person. The health warning also included yellow stainer mushrooms, which are very similar to the common field mushroom, but they differ as in a different species of a related species to the field mushroom. And they stain yellow, and they can also cause nausea and need to be avoided. As with all food that we put in our mouths, it's not very wise to put in something that you don't know its edibility and safety. So experimenting with mushrooms is not to be advocated.
Are they both very distinctive mushrooms, and have they proven to be a real problem in the state if health authorities are having to put out a warning?
They are distinctive to people like us who work on fungi and mushrooms, but probably to the average person they're not. The death cap, for example, is only found under certain introduced trees. And that's because it's an introduced fungus, and it actually lives with the roots of those trees, helping the trees actually to grow. But they're only under those particular trees and only in certain circumstances, and there's certain locations in New Zealand where we know that they do occur. The yellow stainer is much more common and would be out there amongst field mushrooms. But you just got to be careful when you pick the field mushroom that you don't also pick the yellow stainer.
And have both these mushrooms proven to be a real problem in Victoria if health authorities are having to put out these warnings?
I suspect so. They have had some poisonings over there. We have also here, but ours have not been as common, and only maybe one resulted in a death. So each year there will be a very, very small number in New Zealand, and it seems to be much more common in Victoria. Maybe there's more people from countries where mushroom collecting is part of their culture, and so they think they can do similar in Australia, and are not really familiar with what they find and hence take risks.
Let's turn now to this most recent case of mushrooms in Australia, the New Zealander who's died after drinking a mushroom drink. It's believed it was magic mushrooms, or at least it's been reported it was magic mushrooms in the drink. Is this then an unusual reaction?
Yes. Magic mushrooms, hallucinogenic mushrooms, they're considered a Class A drug in New Zealand, so they're illegal, but they typically cause a hallucinogenic reaction and are therefore collected in the field by people for that purpose. There are some lookalike mushrooms as well, so that the risk that people who don't know magic mushrooms very well actually take in collecting them is that they may unknowingly collect lookalike ones, which could become toxic in themselves or sometimes could be toxic if taken with alcohol. So we don't know the circumstances in this case, but if they were magic mushrooms, they weren't actually the desired magic mushrooms. They were unfortunate lookalikes, which were toxic.
Who should be foraging for mushrooms, Peter? It sounds like only the experts and those with exact intimate knowledge of each mushroom should be going out there and foraging.
Well, yes. I mean, it's the same thing. Who should be going out and collecting plants to eat? Mm. You know, it's no different with fungi as it is with plants or with animals. I mean, putting something in your mouth, is it edible? Is it not edible? Well, don't know. Better not try. And you'll find out the hard way that it wasn't edible. So please be careful.
Indeed, please be careful. Peter Buchanan from Landcare Research, really appreciate your time and expertise.
It's a pleasure, Imogen. Thanks very much.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read From Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like it's been a wee while since I sprinkled an animal story into Newsable, so boy oh boy, do I have a goodie for you today. This is from the BBC. A herd of cows on the island of Guernsey escaped their field, but instead of doing a runner, the herd appears to have handed themselves in to the local animal shelter. They left their farm and simply just made their way down the road to the Guernsey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Further reading into this as well, it seems to reveal this is actually typical behaviour from the animals of Guernsey, because the centre, the Guernsey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, this centre says it's had a stray horse walk into the car park before, and two goats have also trotted on site after they escaped their field too. Very well behaved escapees indeed. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a goodie.
Newsable. News that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wazz! Go the Black Caps. And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footy,
do.
Don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer height.
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates sock height?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne Every Bit Different.